Hello and welcome to the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care podcast. My name is Guy Melrose. Today we're looking at the use of oxygen in the management of acute coronary syndrome. Is it harmful and when should we use it? So I'd like to welcome to the podcast of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care, Professor Bridget Dicker. Bridget is an adjunct professor at AUT, the Auckland University of Technology, in their paramedicine department. She also heads up the head of clinical audit and research for St John here in New Zealand, and is also a working paramedic in the Auckland region. She's done had a number of publications within the resuscitation sphere. So the reason we're talking with Bridget today is because of a paper that has recently come out in the British Medical Journal. The title of that paper is High Flow Oxygen and Risk of Mortality in Patients with Suspected Acute Coronary Syndrome, Pragmatic Cluster Randomized Crossover Trial. And the lead author on this paper was Rafe Stewart, and Bridget was one of the other authors on this paper, and so she's kindly agreed to talk to us today about this study and about any implications it has for our ongoing management of acute coronary syndrome, particularly in the urgent care and paramedic world. So welcome, Bridget, and thank you so much for agreeing to speak to us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be involved in this podcast, so thank you for the invitation.
As I mentioned, the title of the paper is High Flow Oxygen in the Suspected Acute Coronary Syndrome. And this has been something over the years that's changed since I was at medical school. The old mantra of putting on high flow oxygen in anybody with chest pain was under the acronym MONA, the morphine, oxygen, nitrates, aspirin. And that changed in the last 10 years or so, I guess, is probably when I've become aware of it. So let's start with just the beginnings of why this paper was needed. Why did you need to look further into the role of oxygen in acute coronary syndrome?
There's still quite a lot of controversy in the role of high flow versus low oxygen in the setting of acute coronary syndromes. And the thinking behind that was because high flow oxygen could cause vasoconstriction, and where there's already ischemia to the myocardium, this could cause further damage. Conversely, if you're limiting oxygen to an already ischemic myocardium, that could also cause further damage. And the previously published studies hadn't been done in a sort of real world care setting. So it was really important to have a pragmatic study, and also done in New Zealand in our setting of care, to show that high flow oxygen or low flow oxygen, whether that causes harm or doesn't.
So that's worth pointing out there, isn't it? This is a New Zealand study, and it was based all around the country over a couple of years, and involved 40,000 patients. So it's a big study, and therefore it's got some important findings because of that. Could we maybe just touch on how many people were actually involved and from what disciplines and what parts of the country? Because I mentioned, obviously, Rafe Stewart as the lead and yourself out of AUT, but this was a big New Zealand project, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. There were, I think, more than 50 researchers or clinicians involved right across the patient pathway. So all hospitals, all ambulances, all emergency departments, all cath labs and coronary care units right across New Zealand. It was really an exciting trial to be part of, because often ambulance doesn't get a chance to take part in these studies, and we spend quite a bit of time with patients prior to them getting to an emergency department. So having the early oxygen, high oxygen versus low oxygen across that continuum of care was one of the key things for this study.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I was sort of drawn to it. Not only was it a New Zealand-based study and a big one at that, but we're in a similar situation in an urgent care setting where you know, we're putting on the oxygen at that first presentation, but it might be a little bit of time before they end up sitting in ED with a cardiologist and heading to a cath lab or wherever. And so it's nice to know whether what we're doing in those initial phases is the correct thing. So you were looking to identify this patients with suspected acute coronary syndrome in the ambulance setting out in the community, and we're then looking at the difference in outcomes between those that received high flow oxygen and low flow. So I guess the first question would be, what's the difference in your study between high flow and the low flow oxygen protocols?
So in the high flow oxygen protocol, all patients were administered oxygen at 6 to 8 liters by face mask, regardless of what their initial saturations were. And in the low flow, patients were only given oxygen if their SpO2 was less than 90%. And then the oxygen was titrated to maintain their oxygen saturations between 90 and 94%. And then after 6 months, they were swapped to the other arm of the study. So it was a clustered trial.
So once the patients were allocated their cohort and they received either the high flow or the low flow oxygen, what were you then measuring in terms of outcomes?
So we measured outcomes of mortality was the primary outcome of the study. So 30-day mortality or 1 year mortality in the patient groups. We also managed to measure the SpO2 readings as well. And this is really unique because we have an electronic patient care record in the ambulance setting now, so we could follow the patient's oxygen saturations from pre-hospital to in-hospital. So it's really great to have that kind of data as well.
And as I said, this was going over 2 years and it's all been accumulated and the statisticians have been involved. And then what was the outcome of the paper? What did you discover the effect of high flow oxygen or low flow oxygen had in these ACS patients?
And so it was a neutral outcome showing that there was neither benefit nor harm from each strategy. Which gives us confidence in using the conservative strategy that we currently use in the ambulance sector. So currently our protocol for oxygen administration is to only give oxygen if saturation is below 94%. And so the more our strategy is more aligned, I guess, to the low oxygen of the strategy. And key outcome from this paper showed that there was not harm in using that protocol. And similarly, if we over-oxygenated patients in this setting, that equally didn't show harm.
So it supported what we were already meant to be doing, which was in the presence of suspected acute coronary syndrome, if the oxygen saturations were 95% or greater, then you do not give supplemental oxygen. And if it is below that, you give supplemental oxygen to get the levels to 95%. So it supported the current findings, the current guidelines.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which I guess is reassuring. Were you expecting that? I mean, you were obviously wanting to get an answer from your studies, but was that what the suspicion was going forwards, or were you expecting a different outcome?
We weren't sure about the harm, if there was potential harm from over-oxygenating patients, and we certainly didn't see more mortality in that group of patients, which was interesting. And one of the other interesting findings was that with patients in the subgroup that had STEMI, it actually looked like there was less mortality for those that were given the high oxygen strategy. But we definitely need more research in that area.
Okay, so in the presence of a STEMI, there may be further work needed as to whether the high flow actually has benefit or not. But in the acute coronary syndrome suspected, at this stage the findings were neutral in that it didn't seem to do any extra harm, but it also didn't give any benefit. So sticking with the current protocol is the current recommendation. Is that something that you're looking to do then? Is that a follow-on from this, that this group will be looking to do, the STEMI? Because we obviously got the out-of-hospital STEMI pathway for St John here in New Zealand now. So is it something that's on the cards, or is that for someone else to do?
It would certainly be an exciting and very interesting study to undertake. But there's a lot less patients with STEMI, so we'd have to have a huge cohort in order to show any significant difference, if there was any. So in order to undertake that study, it would have to be an international trial with other regions also doing the same protocol. Yeah, because we probably wouldn't get enough patients in New Zealand unless we had a very prolonged duration of the trial.
So for the time being, a STEMI patient is given oxygen to maintain 95 or above. Is that still the St John protocol in the presence of STEMI?
Yes, yep, absolutely, yep.
Excellent. So as you say, you said it was a fun project to be involved with. And I think one of the reasons for that is that you mentioned it was involved so many different organisations and clinicians and departments from across the country, and 40,000 patients. So it's a big study. One of the reasons I thought it was of interest to us is that, as I mentioned, we have that urgent care and paramedic interface whenever we have patients with an acute coronary syndrome or a STEMI for that matter, because we are invariably transferring those patients to hospital via an ambulance. And so it's important for our members to be working on the same protocols and the same pathways as you guys. And we've mentioned before, when we've had a chat to some of your colleagues, that your guidelines that you've got, the CPG handbooks, are a great read for any urgent care doctor, because they're so well written and they're so up to date with everything that you need to know. And I would always encourage everybody to try and get their hands on one of those if they could. And in the handover setting, it's very important for us to hand over patients properly and to engage at that point of handover, because that's a really important part of this patient's journey through their medical event. So I would encourage our members to read this paper. It's in the BMJ and it's open access, so you don't need any special logins to read it. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the to where you can read it. And I would like to thank you, Professor Dicker, for coming on the podcast to highlight this large New Zealand-based study that has shown what we're doing is correct, and that we're sensible just to keep our patients' oxygen levels above 95%. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and also our protocols and CPGs, so clinical guidelines, I'm pretty sure they're freely available from our external website. So I can give you that link as well to download them. Excellent. If that's helpful.
That would be great. I think they're fantastic. They were a book, a big thick book, and then so anyone who can get them in an online version would certainly save a lot of paper. But yeah, we'll put the link in there as well, which as I say, they're a real bible of information. So yeah, thank you for that as well.
No problem.
My thanks to Professor Dicker for talking to the podcast. It is great to hear about a multidisciplinary New Zealand-based study and one that contributes to our current practice. Do please follow the link in the show notes to read the paper for yourselves. If you have any comments, questions, corrections or suggestions, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. Now we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then, but for now, thanks for listening.